This is episode 11 of Dear Analyst, and in today's episode, I'm going to be talking about an article I recently read on Quartz called I Fell Out of Love with Microsoft Excel Because Google Sheets is Better by Dan Kopf. Hopefully I'm saying his name right. And Dan is a reporter at Quartz. He reports on economics and pop culture based on his Twitter profile. And aside from the kind of clickbaity title of this article, you don't really see too many stories coming out about using Excel, Google Sheets, so on and so forth. This article caught my attention because of the title. And of course, I'm a big user of Microsoft Excel and Google Sheets. So curious to hear about Dan's take on this whole situation. And I like how in the very, very top of the article, I'll put a link to this in the episode, he writes a nice little if statement where if Sheets is greater than Excel with the greater than sign, comma, double quotes, move on, otherwise stay. And I think for him, Sheets has obviously outpaced Excel, which is why he decided to move on. And I generally agree with most of his points in the article. To quickly summarize, he first started using Excel in high school and started using it a little more in college. And as he started his career in economics, Excel obviously became one of his most trusted tools given his career. And when Google Sheets came out in 2006, he kind of started playing with it, but it lacked many of the features that Excel has. But then over time, Google Sheets started accumulating more features that drew his attention, such as being able to share in real time and collaborate without having to send email, without having to email Excel files with different versions. That's obviously one of the hugest advantages of Google Sheets. Although you can do this with Office Online now, but it does require you to have a subscription. And Google Sheets, of course, you can share things for free. And you also couldn't really hide rows and columns in Google Sheets up until 2007. The number of functions was limited. You couldn't do pivot tables for a while. So for all intents and purposes, Google Sheets was really inferior to Excel up until around, I would say, 2011, 2012. And I think in the article, he does talk a little bit about his love for Excel, of course, and how Google Sheets was perceived as a really kind of knockoff. But it seems like the straw that broke the back was a bug that appeared, let's see here, in early 2018, where he couldn't, let me see here, he says that he couldn't sort columns of data alphabetically from highest to lowest without Excel crashing. Now, of course, many of you know, if you've ever used Excel and it crashes, it's probably one of the worst feelings in the world because you've done all this work and you've probably haven't hit save in a few minutes or maybe for an hour or so if you're working on a big file. And if Excel all of a sudden crashes and your work doesn't get recovered, well, that's tough luck. So there goes your entire analysis for the last, and all your work for the last hour. And of course, the great thing about Google Sheets is that everything you do is auto-saved into the cloud. And when he encountered this bug where he couldn't even do something as simple as sorting columns of data, that kind of really took it to the next level, and he decided to ditch Excel to a certain extent. And he also talks a bit about using R, Python, Julia, and other kind of more data science and statistical languages. But I think for me, after reading this, it's hard to believe that he completely stopped using Excel. And the reason I say this is because Excel is still good at so many things that Google Sheets cannot do. For one thing, I think I came across someone saying this on Twitter, is that despite all the improvements and advancements with Google Sheets, if you become proficient in Excel, especially with the keyboard shortcuts, there's still many keyboard shortcuts that you can't use in Google Sheets that are still prevalent in Excel. And I think this could be a function of just having to learn the Google Sheets shortcuts. But I think for me, one of the powers of Excel is not necessarily just being able to write formulas and formatting, but it's being able to quickly navigate to certain menu items in the toolbar, which I don't believe are fully accessible through keyboard shortcuts in Google Sheets. Again, this could be just my pure ignorance of not knowing the keyboard shortcuts in Google Sheets, but I still think there is a place for Excel in the workplace. So that's why when he says that, when Dan says he completely ditches Excel, I still find that very hard to believe, given that so many businesses and companies rely on the Office suite. And if you don't use Excel, then you kind of can't really do your job at many companies. Now, having said that, Google Sheets is definitely pretty awesome. I definitely use Google Sheets for simple tasks and analyses, and especially now that it's so close to parity with Excel, it's hard to not want to use Google Sheets in many situations. And especially when it comes to sharing data, Google Sheets definitely takes the cake here because of the fact that it started off as real-time and collaborative in nature and the fact that it's in the cloud. So I think from that perspective, there are many situations where in business, you're thinking about what's the purpose of the data. Is it to simply, I need to quickly do an analysis, run some analysis, find the results, and maybe output that into PowerPoint or share that with a wider audience? That's probably where I would use Excel because I'm just so much faster in the tool. But then when it comes to having to collaborate and share the data and working on the data set together with your team, that's when Google Sheets obviously outshines. Unless, of course, your team is a Microsoft shop and you have the proper Office 365 online subscription, then you can obviously do all those things with Microsoft Office Online and with Teams. But since many businesses probably just rely on the free version of Google Sheets and the Google Suite, then that's pretty much all you need. Now, reason why I think Google Sheets will not replace Excel, and why I think people like Dan who say they claim to have ditched Excel will still be using Excel, is that, again, many businesses still rely on using the Microsoft Office suite. I used to work at a company where we relied on the Oracle stack for our database and for all different kinds of data, financial data storing. And all of that was, the only way you could really interact with that data was by using SQL to pull that data out of Oracle and then doing analysis in Excel. And there were also plugins built on top of Excel to help you input data into the Oracle database. Now, I think it'll be very rare to find an accounting and controls function within a Fortune 500 company that is not using Excel to manage their books and doing their month-end close. If you are coming from an accounting controls perspective, having to manage sensitive data in Google Sheets and having that, I mean, of course, Google Sheets, if you are using Google, chances are you haven't lost data before and it's been, you know, five nines in terms of uptime and it's very reliable. But when it comes to storing your company's balance sheets and income and actual financial data, I find it hard to believe that any company would rely on Google Sheets as their main data store. And I highly doubt that many accounting divisions would actually use and trust Google Sheets to do their month-end close process. So that is a behemoth that will be very hard to move. And so that's why I think ditching Excel in favor of Google Sheets would not serve you best if you're trying to get into the field of accounting and finance. But again, many companies that are more forward thinking and needing to share data collaboratively, that's where Google Sheets will really shine. And I think I think there's two key takeaways for me from reading this article, which I've started believing in the last 3 to 5 years of my career, is that I used to think that Excel was the end all be all, that you had to put all your analyses, all any kind of data analysis, any kind of tool that you were thinking about building for the enterprise or for your office had to be built in Excel. And sometimes that was to the detriment of the tool you're imagining itself. What I mean by that is Excel is great for finance and for accounting and for numbers, but it may not be the best tool to build a headcount planner in. It may not be the best tool to build a customer relationship management tool. But unfortunately, many Excel analysts and data analysts, and I count myself as one of them, tries to stuff these ideas for tools into Excel when Excel is not necessarily the right platform. And I think a lot of Excel aficionados, even Google Sheets aficionados, they take pride in trying to basically put kind of like a round peg into a square hole because of the mastery they have with the tool. And I think this article, one of the key takeaways is that being able to recognize the right tool to use for the right situation is what I think helps most organizations, rather than having to kind of put a trying to use duct tape to put together a tool in Excel or Google Sheets that wasn't where Google Sheets and Excel may not have been the best tool to use. I see this happen a lot with project managers or product managers, where they're using Google Sheets to manage timelines and sprints and product plans, where a lot of SaaS applications would be perfectly just fine, but they're just so much more comfortable using a grid in Google Sheets or Excel to manage that process that they end up stuffing, again, a tool that isn't stuffing an idea for a tool that isn't meant for Excel or Google Sheets. So that's kind of one takeaway, is that I think if you are pro Excel and love using Excel, there are definitely other tools to consider depending on the use case. And given the advantages of the cloud, it really behooves you to think about, should there be a SaaS platform that you can use that would better serve the use case and the idea for a tool you're trying to build, rather than just trying to stuff it into Excel or Google Sheets. So that's key takeaway number one. Key takeaway number two. When Dan mentions that he came across that bug in early 2018 where he couldn't sort data without Excel crashing, he put a link to a Microsoft Excel. So it's answers.microsoft.com. It's a Microsoft Excel forum for people to ask questions and for the community to provide answers. A really typical community forum hosted by Microsoft. And interestingly, the title of the thread is called Excel Crashing with Custom Sort, exactly what Dan was experiencing in the article. And interestingly, Microsoft actually turned off this thread, so you can't even reply to this thread anymore. I guess they don't want comments anymore coming from this problem. And this problem was published on April 2010, 2018. And one really big downside of Excel, and this thread, I'll also link to it in the show notes, perfectly exemplifies why Excel is not a great platform, is they talk about how in order to resolve this bug in Excel, you have to download and you have to basically update Office and Excel to the most updated version of Office. And so in this thread, people are saying, oh, I have this version of Excel and this version of Microsoft Office, and is it the right version? And I bought this version of Office. I have the Home and Business 2016 for Mac version. I have this Windows version. And everyone's talking about which version is the problem and what do I need to do to update my Office suite to make sure this bug doesn't exist anymore. And someone down, let's see here, on April 11th, I guess the day after the bug was reported, is they say you might have to update your Microsoft Auto Updater in order to see the updates. Optionally, you can install the updated applications individually. I'm placing two links below, and he basically links to places where you can update the software or update the Auto Updater. Now, just to get your Excel to properly sort, you have to update an auto updater for Office. Now, that sentence is so backwards. The fact that you have to update an updater just so you can update Excel so that it works again, that is so crazy. And that is one of the reasons why, you can obviously turn on auto updates in Microsoft Office, but then you might be sitting at your computer for a few minutes waiting for Office to update. But this is one of the main advantages of using a SaaS tool like Google Sheets or many other tools, is that guess what? If there's a bug, that team behind the product is going to be pushing an update the minute they find a solution. And there's no such thing as updating your auto updater to update the application. It just updates in real time because everything's in the cloud. So again, these are all the kind of pros and cons of using cloud applications, SaaS applications versus not. But this is a very clear indicator of how you want to do something as simple as sorting data in Excel, and you can't do that because you have to update the program that updates your program. Like, this is so backwards, and maybe it's a lot more seamless with Office Online. But the fact that this is a problem that came out early last year shows that Microsoft still has a lot to work on in terms of just fixing bugs and getting it out there to the community. I think when same thing for apps on your phone, I don't always turn on the auto updates on my phone for my apps, and therefore there could be bugs, there could be small fixes that need to be fixed, but I don't really care because I'm not using certain apps all the time, and I'll update apps kind of like on a haphazard basis. But this idea that you have to rely on downloading updates and installing patches, I think is kind of becoming like a very a pattern that's going to slowly die away because of how much faster you can deliver updates via just SaaS applications. And so that when you basically reload a tab on your Chrome or whatever browser you use, the tool is updated. You don't have to worry about downloading an update or patch. So I think that's an interesting tiki takeaway I took from this article, because it's very rare where I've had to go deep into the thread of like updating an auto updater to update my Excel so that it works again. And there might be kind of some kind of cultural aspect of this too. And when I say culture, I mean a lot of people, I think, especially in the IT and maybe DevOps world, where you take pride in knowing that you knew how to rack servers and you knew how to do routing tables for networking aspects of your network. These were all things that you had to do when you had physical hardware, you had a rack in your data center. But now, because of public cloud platforms like AWS and Google Cloud Platform, Microsoft Azure, all that stuff is basically obsolete, and you as the IT DevOps person don't have to worry about all that kind of back end stuff. But I think there's a class of people, and I count myself in that realm of, I like knowing all these little nooks and crannies and nuances about the program, about the tool I'm using, because it gives me a sense of accomplishment and a sense of mastery of the tool. And so I think a lot of people that know that you have to update the auto updater in order for it to update Excel, some people take pride in knowing that that's the answer and there's no way around it, and you just have to put up with it. But I think for me personally, I'm getting into this more habit of changing my beliefs about how software works, changing my beliefs about how data should be used and shared, and that you don't have to rely on these kind of older methods, because it's just backwards thinking. It's kind of like times are moving on, and you either change with it or you don't. And I'd rather change and stay up to date rather than think that updating an auto updater is the right way and right pattern to go. But you know, that's just my personal opinion and preference. And I personally think that this is a problem with how you can solve a lot of problems in Excel that may come up because of some simple bug that was introduced with the new version of Excel that wasn't fully tested. So hope you give this article from Dan a read. Definitely very interesting, and he links to a bunch of interesting links in the article. And yeah, it's very rare to see an article about Google Sheets or Excel kind of cross into the mainstream. I consider Quartz kind of like a little mainstream news site. So props to Dan for writing this up. So for the second half of the episode, here are two podcast episodes that I listened to recently that caught my attention and think you will enjoy. The first one is one I don't think I've talked about yet on Dear Analyst, and it's the Making Sense podcast with Sam Harris, one of my favorite podcast hosts to listen to. Sam is I'm going to totally butcher his bio, but I just think of him as like a really deep thinker, philosopher, author. And in episode 153, he talks to a series of folks from a anthology called Possible Minds, 25 Ways of Looking at AI. And I think this around the 3 hour, 12 minute mark, he's talking to Stuart Russell, and they're talking about the idea of generalized AI, of where an AI can not necessarily be programmed to learn all the rules of a game or some situation and automatically know how to respond and play that game very well. And Stuart talks about how there was an AI machine learning algorithm built for the game of Go and the game of chess. And the computer was not necessarily programmed to play the game of Go or play the game of chess, but rather it was given a set of general rules, or I guess you can say like boundaries around how it should handle certain situations. And what the algorithm eventually did was it took hundreds of thousands or millions of games of Go and chess, and it just learned all the different moves through watching these different games. And then eventually it just played, it developed reinforcement learning, where it learned how to play the game of Go and game of chess by simulating all the hundreds of thousands of games that it played in the lifetime of the game. And they're saying how Go and chess were obviously big accomplishments for, I think it was DeepMind that built the algorithm, but then it moved on to games like StarCraft, one of my favorite games, and Dota. And now you're getting to, I think what was interesting when they talked about how AI can now play games like StarCraft is that it went from a short timeline to a long timeline, where the number of branches that the AI, the algorithm, has to consider when playing a game like StarCraft is just exponentially so much greater than chess or Go. But by being able to play a game like StarCraft, we're getting closer to a generalized AI that can basically understand any situation and apply best practices in reinforcement learning to find the optimal answer to play that game or play out that situation. Now, I'm not an AI expert at all, but it was really interesting thought exercise to wonder about, could we provide the boundaries and the algorithm to a machine and provide the reinforcement learning it needs so that it doesn't have to know anything about the game, anything about the situation, but it knows that it has to optimize along points, optimize along success rates, I'll optimize along XYZ path, and it does whatever it needs to do to win. Now, I talked about StarCraft, I think, on a previous episode, and I think one unfair advantage with what happened with AlphaStar was that it had an insanely high APM, actions per minute, and in StarCraft, how quickly you can move your mouse, click on units and attack, that really determines how successful you are. And the AlphaStar in that match where it was playing the human, it was completely just destroying the human because it could have an APM of greater than 400, which is like an insane APM. So I wouldn't say that showed me that it can play StarCraft really well, but rather that in certain aspects of the game specifically relating to APM, it really just killed its competitors. But I wouldn't say that made it a generalized AI at all. Anywho, great episode about AI, and of course, I had to talk about it because it mentioned one of my favorite games, StarCraft. All right, the second episode that I'm going to talk about is from Code Newbie. And this is with Joanna Smith, who I believe is a, I'm going to get this wrong, but she, I believe, is a, she works on the G Suite team at Google, focusing on, I would say, I'm going to make this up, but developer tools, perhaps. But essentially, she is helping promote and evangelize using the G Suite, basically the G Suite and all the different tools within the G Suite, and also how you can tie them together using Google Apps Script. And this is Season 8, Episode 3, Coding Without Code with Joanna Smith. And around minute 14, the host, I forgot her name, but she asked Joanna, who are the people using Google Apps Script? Who are the ones that are tying together all the different tools within G Suite? And her answer was interesting, but also kind of, I think, dodged the question a little bit. And I thought that was really interesting because I think about that and a lot in my own company, because we're also trying to go after a similar space and similar audience. And she first mentions there are the developers. So there are companies out there, you might call them ISVs, independent service vendors. I don't know if I got the acronym right. But they're essentially kind of like developer programming agencies that will work with your organization and figure out custom scripts and custom applications that you can build on top of G Suite that can tie your Gmail with Google Calendar, with your Google Sheets. And they are purely technical that can help you build these tools that can help your organization work more efficiently within the G Suite. That's number one, the developers. Number two, she mentions the knowledge workers. So those are people that are just using Excel, using Google Sheets all day, and they're fairly proficient with writing formulas. But once in a while, they need to automate a few things. So they'll look into writing a simple macro. They'll Google a few shortcuts to understand what buttons to press and how they can put that into the macro. And so they're not developers by any stretch of the imagination, although I would argue that they are kind of developing. But they have these workflows that they're trying to automate, and they'll use macros to do the job. And so that's the knowledge worker, who kind of gets into a little bit of scripting. Then she talks about the citizen developer or the citizen scripter. And these are people who are comfortable writing scripts, but they won't call themselves developers because they're not in code all day, but they know how to write scripts. They know how to tie things together in G Suite, and they're using Google Apps Script to do that. And so the host goes on to ask Joanna, well, which one of these communities are you really trying to go after? And Joanna didn't really give a great answer because she mentions that there's a little bit of debate internally, I guess, on the G Suite team or at Google more broadly, about who is the right community to go after. Is it the developers? Is it the citizen? Is it the knowledge workers? Are we supposed to be calling people developers? And I think she talks about how by saying that Google Apps Script and the G Suite is for developers really limits the people. And if you want to be more inclusive with the teams and the types of people that can use your platform, saying developers or saying programmers might be very limiting. And I think the idea with Google Apps Script is that it really can be very easy to pick up for any person that is used to using Excel or used to using Google Sheets and has a little bit of knowledge of writing macros. And it's supposed to be very approachable. And if you say that this is meant for developers, then that knowledge worker will feel less inclined to want to work with the platform. And I can see a lot of business analysts out there, a lot of, you know, HR analysts that are really experts at using Excel, but may not want to use Google Apps Script purely because, oh no, this is code. I don't want to get into code. That's not what I do. So I think there's a lot of internal debates about in the G Suite team about what is the right term to use for the person that knows how to use Excel, knows how to Google things to put into macros, but is not committing codes to GitHub, not committing code to GitHub all the time, and doing and reviewing PRs and looking at Stack Overflow all day. So I find that debate really interesting, and it's something that I'm really passionate about unlocking in terms of the people I talk to on a daily basis for my job. And it's interesting to hear that even one of the biggest tech companies in the world is also wrestling with what to call this new group of developers or programmers or citizen workers or knowledge workers, whatever you want to call them. It's definitely going to be interesting to see where the next 3 to 5 years go, what the next 3 to 5 years looks like in terms of the number of people that can use something like Google Apps Script and a lot of the low-code, no-code platforms out there. So Code Newbie, definitely a great podcast to listen to. I consider myself a newbie to code, so that's why I like listening to it.